Been a couple of weeks since we checked in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for an update. So nice to see you again, Tacky.
Hey, good to see you, Joe. Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks. August is almost over.
Indeed, yeah. How did the virtual August Moon Festival go, by the way?
It isn't the same as being there in person. I mean, I'm sure people have missed my ice pops, paper fans, and jawbreakers, which is my mainstay. But the team had to do as much as they can in a short period of time with what was available. We're very thankful for people that sponsored the event. Many donors and people bought raffle tickets to support the agency, but unfortunately it doesn't have the same feel. And given the short time period of change to do so, and trying to get some entertainment up online, they did the best they could. So it went all right. But given the question really simple, is this going to continue no phase four, which means now they've had basically a test run, will there be a virtual event for Chinese New Year come January, February?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of questions right now about the future and not a lot of answers, that's for sure.
No, absolutely not. I mean, the governor's reduction of social gatherings of doors to 25 is an indicator of continued concern regarding spread. As people watched in the news around the country, including domestically here in Massachusetts and the surrounding states, large clusters of people tends to improve your odds of transmitting the disease.
What has happened at the State House since last we chatted? Anything of note to let folks know about?
Well, August is a recess. The speaker had informed us that there would be no formal sessions this month. What's unusual this year is that we are continuing sessions into the fall and winter. So most people don't realize that our official end date for this legislative session is in January before swearing in day, which I believe is January 5th, is the Tuesday before swearing in day, which is a whole other question regarding how we're going to do swearing in day. Social distancing and such seems to be a challenge. Obviously, we need to do some more technology upgrades at our level regarding accessing our service remotely and securely, which we haven't established yet, as well as my staff is working from home still and doing everything remotely. We're running staff meetings once to three times a week, depending on the circumstances, and I chat with my staff individually at least once a day, whether by text message or by phone. Sometimes text messages go all day. We did hold one public hearing in the committee regarding some home petitions. People still file home petitions regarding liquor license over quotas, where people get more liquor licenses, or the town or city gets more liquor licenses. It exceeds the state allowance of quotas per population. We are preparing to have briefings for the committee members next month regarding the current state of consumer confidence, as well as industry issues around the country. We are working towards a oversight hearing follow-up regarding the Division of Professional Licensures, a Sex Offender Registry Board, lack of proper cross-referencing that was reported last year, which we're going to follow up again this year on our findings based on our inquiries to the agency. So we can do some follow-up questions to the agency as well as brief the members of what we've found regarding the data requests that we're able to get. And we're going to have to hold some more public hearings again on consumer-related bills as they come forward, as well as these liquor licenses, home petition requests. And the big one that we're trying to prepare for is the home petition request for the City of Boston, where they've requested 183 additional liquor licenses beyond their allowance. Given the state of the restaurant industry in Boston, we learned through the ABCC that 224 licenses are still available for on-premise drinking for restaurants, which leads to the question, why do you need more licenses when you already have quite a bit available? And the restaurant industry is going to have a monstrous hit going into the winter. Death rate, sadly putting in its death rate for restaurants, I think will be closer to 40 to 60% so. Unless there's a dramatic change as we get to the wintertime, outdoor seating becomes challenged. Using completely indoor ventilation, there's no window opportunity unless we have a very, very, very warm winter.
Right.
And that's where the challenges really come from. And some of the higher end restaurants will really be more challenged as well. So it could be really rough all around, especially in the city of Boston.
Yeah, and speaking with Ron Iacobucci at the Quincy Career Center, they're already gearing up for many jobs to not come back. So they're trying to encourage folks to train for new skills, you know, for maybe some new emerging opportunities, possibly in healthcare or maybe the green energy industry or places like that.
Yeah, the challenge here is that generally when there's a recession, there's an evolution. So whenever there's any type of recession going on, you're right, it's a chance to re-educate, to get new education, to retool your business through necessity. The problem with the pandemic is that it doesn't follow conventional economic rules. And the retooling is not regarding the fact that you're in a recessionary period and business competition has changed. It's because you have to change your operational method, and consumer behavior is not driven by the economy, but it's driven by a disease, which is now driving an economy of which only we can try to address in order to get our economy moving. And that's something that I have repeated multiple times, that only we as individuals can choose to stop this disease or reduce its impact so that people can comfortably go to our local businesses to be able to move our economy forward. The responsibility is squarely on us.
Are you seeing at the international level any improvements in economies, say in Europe or Southeast Asia?
They're all going to suffer major GDP losses ranging from 1% or 6% or perhaps even greater, depending on the circumstances going into the fall. China's the only country that seems to be going to come out at first because first in, first out. But even then, they're looking at GDP growth of about 1%, and I'm not even sure that's going to be stable for that. Korea has gone into lockdown mode again because they've got clusters, you know, roaming to 300 zone that limited lockdown in certain locations. Places like Singapore continues to see a very slow infection rate continuation, just like Massachusetts. Places like Hong Kong and China and all these other countries are still doing 14-day quarantines on arrival. Italy, which has allowed tourism to return, is now doing checks right at the gate regarding COVID-19 and hoping the rapid testing is accurate. Greece, which did an incredible job at the beginning, has now started to rise as well because people are flocking into the country. And given the asymptomatic nature of disease, you have to do a test. The temperature screening may not be sufficient. And even domestically, we see this with college campuses. Schools around the U.S. that is willing to reopen to all capacity for students, and most of them are going to be all domestic students because they come here, you know, you're going to have to undergo testing and self-quarantine. But as you saw in the news, you know, even at BU and you know, they have one party in this movement in the conversation about more parties as the start of the school year. And this is going to reduce the student capacity in our biggest schools, BU and Northeastern.
How practical, tacky, do you think that 14-day quarantine is and is working? I mean, it's largely the honor system, is it not?
Yes, it is. Most countries operate in some level honor systems. Some places that have the resources actually give you a GPS bracelet, for lack of a better term. It's not quite a bracelet, but they give you a GPS device. Others are requiring you to take temperatures and record your temperatures on a sheet and report it daily to the Department of Public Health in your city, in that country. Like Hong Kong does that. They give you a test in the form of, you know, take your temperature, record it down, report it in. So, you know, the incubation period is believed to be 14 days. There are exceptions, it appears, where people have gone 3 weeks, some people go 3 days. So, you know, obviously it's not a hard and fast rule for every single person, but you know, this is the current practice, is 14 days based on, you know, what little information we have still. Is mm-hmm. I tell folks, every time we turn around, we learn something new about this disease.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a big part of the challenge. And both Korea and Hong Kong have confirmed a reinfection case where one person had COVID, recovered, and now has been reinfected with the same disease. Mm. There was reports of this in Korea towards July that there was reinfections, but it was kind of a false positive situation because it was detecting antibodies, basically not antibodies, dead virus in your system.
Okay.
So it wasn't quite a true positive, but in this case for these two situations, these two people, unfortunately, has been reaffected. It is a live virus. So, you know, this conversation with immunity has always been a question mark, and how long it will last. And perhaps they're the outliers, but if it's not the outliers and there's more infections, reinfections elsewhere, as testing continues and monitoring continues, and people willing to report to their healthcare providers that they could potentially be infected, you know, this could be very, very troublesome.
Yeah, interesting what that would mean for a vaccine too, and the development for, you know, for a vaccine that would be effective at preventing the reinfection.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of hype worldwide about vaccine. For example, the Chinese have said that they develop a vaccine, their frontline workers and the government workers have been utilizing for about a month or so. The Russians have claimed that their scientists have created a vaccine with no real evidence out there it's worked. I think people undervalue exactly the level of safety we have providing medications and the cautions we take given amount of time. I do understand the Trump administration, the president, and FDA has accelerated this testing process, but the safety protocols for pharmaceutical companies remain the same. They're not cutting corners on people's safety. So, you know, they all have a lot of talk, but the reality is that they haven't actually proven that if you have a vaccine and you're exposed to people in a controlled setting, meaning that you have people that take a placebo and people actually take the vaccine, what the impact on people are. And you got to think about this. This gets dangerous, right? You have a placebo test group and they expose them to the virus of which we have difficult treating and have really no therapy for right now, versus a vaccine infected group that we don't know what the effectiveness is either. So we're still, you know, a lot of human trial phases regarding, you know, whether it creates antibodies, you know, how does the dead virus, how does the body respond to the dead virus in the system? Because that's what it's trying to do, is try to trick your body to its memory cells and to acknowledge that this is a disease you can fight, you have the capacity to fight it, and this is how you do it. It's like handing, it's like constant education for your body, right? You know, one, sometimes it locks in and it remembers how to fight a disease, and other times it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Most treatments, it's about putting your symptoms in a condition where your body has a fighting chance to win.
Right.
So people have like perception is like a magic pill cure. There are very few of those. A lot of it is, you know, addressing it in a manner where the body knows what to do, and therapies to fend off symptoms to damage your body, to give your body a chance to fight.
Yeah, we're even seeing that in cancer treatments, cancer research, kind of training, you know, your DNA to fight the cells themselves, basically.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, this is kind of the, I think it's not always the greatest media explanation on this stuff, because people have some impression that it's like a magic shot and it takes care of it. I mean, mm-hmm. The therapy is really the key. I mean, we have understanding what the best and proper treatment is, and we have drugs that help mitigate the symptoms so your body's not dealing with that as much and focusing on the disease itself.
Right.
It's no different from the common cold in the sense that we take medication to address symptoms. Mm-hmm. It doesn't cure the cold, it just addresses your symptoms.
Yeah.
So your body has a better shot at fighting the cold virus itself.
Right, which actually the cold virus, according to the health commissioner, is also a form of coronavirus.
Oh, absolutely. This is not the flu virus, and I think that needs to be clear. We're creating a vaccine for the coronavirus, which is a type of a family member of the common cold that we all live with. And we've never been able to cure the common cold, which has infiltrated human society for literally ever, and caused pneumonia. But the common cold is the cause of pneumonia. It's not, you know, it can be the flu, I suppose, but most of the time I hear that it's triggered part of common cold of people that are immune compromised, or they hit a very vicious viral strain, your body doesn't know how to handle it.
Yes.
Symptoms. So, you know, I think there's a lot of confusion and misinformation about this stuff that, you know, obviously I watch the science shows and read the medical doctor, on my end, the reliable ones, and what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of hype and hope, which we should have hope, but I'd be cautious about the hype.
Good advice, I think. Yeah. I wanted to switch gears a little bit, if it's okay, Tacky, and talk a little bit about this group, Quincy for Transformative Change. And as we're recording this on Friday, there's a rally planned this coming Sunday to call for the administration here in the city to declare racism a public health crisis. How do you feel about that?
Honestly, this is the first time I've heard racism as a public health crisis. Right? I mean, these are all very new terminology for all of us. And having an opportunity to truly understand what they're saying is I'm not sure. I mean, again, it's, like I said, hype and hope and, you know, what are we trying to create slogans for? And we do agree, all of us, that there is a healthcare disparity that's not false among people of color as well as people of different socioeconomics. And that coronavirus, COVID-19, is definitely impacting people with different healthcare access than others, and as a result, in higher rates of disease. There's also the fact that, you know, healthcare disparities result in different levels of pre-existing conditions, or more accurately, conditions you have that could be mitigated. So, you know, diet, exercise, proper monitoring of your blood pressure, proper monitoring of diabetes, you know, things that healthcare providers, you know, advise people to do. I am concerned because given the spread of COVID-19 and people's behavior, sometimes I wanted to actually listen to the medical personnel, which I scratch my head sometimes when I watch the news. But I mean, I am a little perplexed because I'm still trying to figure out what they're trying to get at, that racism is a healthcare crisis. To me, racism is a societal issue. And to say that somehow that people are infected by racism, you know, is disturbing, to say the least. We're people, we're allowed to evolve over time. You know, I myself, as well as everyone else, has changing point of views as you grow older, wiser, and more educated about the world around you. You start to have an understanding. I think a lot of issues about racism, as I've talked to folks over the last month or two, is about personal awareness. Are you aware about you know, your behaviors? Are you aware about what's going on? Are you aware how you treat other people? I'm going to tell you that most of us don't think about that stuff. We just live our lives and assume that how we're doing it the way it has been is acceptable. But it, you know, it's not saying that you have to tiptoe around people or be politically correct. And as a public figure, I do try to be sensitive about my words. But even though I do try to be sensitive, I don't always get it right either. You know, subject to human failings, I'm no different. So, you know, going to say I have a public health crisis and I'm able to truly describe how racism is a disease of some form as opposed to a societal change through education, better data collection. Once again, I have my data bill regarding services provided to folks to allow people to better identify themselves regarding their ethnicity. You know, that's how you truly combat racism, you know, with good data and better self-awareness and education and communication among ourselves. So I don't quite fully grasp this issue.
Yeah. Are there things, do you think, that can be legislated at the state level to deal with the issue of disparity in healthcare?
We have a COVID-19 healthcare disparity workforce going on now. They had a meeting, I believe, on Monday, if I remember. My colleague, Donald Wong, is the chair of the Asian Caucus, so he's been appointed onto that. So I told Donald, thankfully, you're on a task force and not me this time. I don't make a pick for these task forces. So I'm thankful that he is taking up this mantle on this particular occasion. I'm dealing with other task force that I'm on. You can only be on so many of these things at once before you start to lose track of which one you're on.
Sure.
So, you know, they had the first meeting, they elected a chair, they had the basic conversations and data, again, is one of them that came up. How do we properly identify, you know, who is being impacted by COVID-19 and, you know, their healthcare providers or systems, are they, you know, adequate? Oh, maybe they have access problems to healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And as we learned from the pandemic, you know, given the high unemployment rate, there's a lot of gig workers, self-employed people, you know, of all types, you know, out there, what types of business, people's situations, different families, and so forth, and can make such a big part of economy. And healthcare is expensive. We all know that in Massachusetts. Insurance is expensive, as well as the cost of healthcare. So hopefully this task force will identify some of the concerns that we have and address it there. I mean, we know for a fact that Secretary Sutter's told us earlier that early testing, the data ethnicity was completely ignored. Even though it was required to fill out, especially by private companies, people to hire private companies, it is required to fill out ethnicity as part of your COVID test. Mm-hmm. And that first batch of massive amount of tests at the beginning doesn't have any data sets associated regarding that information. So we're working behind, and BU Health has a website up, which of course now I forgot what the website is, that actually is trying to compile data from all over the country on this. And, you know, Asians and Native Americans and Pacific Islanders and quote unquote other is not properly collected in some states because they lump into one category and it's not sufficiently disaggregated to show the different ethnic groups properly. Mm. So while it is aggregated in the sense of Latino, Blacks, and Asians and Caucasians, it doesn't actually break it down further in certain areas with Asians in particular, because even though doing an aggregate, the aggregate itself includes other groups that aren't purely just so-called Asian category. And here's a disturbing statistic off that website. And I do, you know, once again, I caution folks, some of the data isn't complete because of everyone's testing and some of the methodologies and data collection. But, you know, 80 out of per 100,000, 80 African Americans, Blacks, you know, are dying or COVID positive from that amount. That's a very high number compared to all the others. Latinos is much lower, followed by actually the next one up is Native Americans. People don't realize that. And Alaskans, Alaska, their data set actually breaks it down to the local Native Americans. They have enormously high compared to population on infection rates. But that's the next group out there, and that's largely not talked about. And they're a very small part of our population, followed by Latinos, Asians, Caucasians. And the most disturbing statistic is other. 32 per 100,000 are other. Who is other is beyond me, because, you know, who are they?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the data off the top of my head, but I believe Caucasians are 34 persons per 100,000 in infection rates. So other is 32 over 100,000. Caucasians are 34 over 100,000. Well, any number is bad. But if you're other, which you mean, that means you're the smallest data set, meaning you have the lowest percentage of the population.
Yeah.
But you get 32 per 100,000. That is a frightening number. And same thing with Asians, we're slightly higher at 35, I think, per 100,000. But once again, we're a very small part of the population. You know, so people look at the data, oh, it's not so bad. One, it's bad because people are dying, so let's cross that off the list. Bad start. Two, you know, as a ratio of the population, in terms of infection rate, that is still fighting. Well, Caucasians are the majority of the population, by far none. The small populations, even though they're not as high as the Black population, as a ratio, it is frightening, the high infection rate.
It is just another example of why accurate census data is so important, right? To be counted, to know who's living in the communities.
No, absolutely. You know, the census takers are out right now. I've seen them on my little walks in the neighborhood, you know, wearing their lanterns and, you know, subdivision with the clipboards and everything else. And, you know, the telephone banking's already started on contacting folks about the census. And, you know, our ability to self-identify in the census is important data for us to not know about the changing face of our communities, but also funding and, you know, let's say healthcare disparities. You know, some of these data sets, as well as future data sets being generated over time, will show, you know, what our healthcare looks like, who's getting and how much of it. And, you know, obviously the very high rise in cost of healthcare that we all experience as well. So we can run the numbers fast since we're at that point in the conversation.
Yeah, let's
do that. Yesterday, As of yesterday, it's a continual uptick regarding nationally, 64.8%. Massachusetts is still ahead of the curve against the national average of 67%. Quincy continues to go up a little at a time. We're actually only 0.6 away from the state average at 66.4. So we're closing the gap now against the average. But we're still behind 2010 at 68.1. So we're still a couple points behind where we should be. That's not true, but we were a decade ago. Meanwhile, neighbors around us continue to be accelerating in terms of reporting. Wayman's at 73.6%. Last 10 years ago, they were at 71.7, so they blew past their 2010 reporting. Bridges at 77.7, Lucky Sevens. They blew past their reporting from 10 years ago at 74.9. Write-offs at 68.7. They're just shy of the 69.7 from last time, so only a percentage point away from 2010. Holbrook is at 73.6. 10 years ago, they're at 71.1. So they've already exceeded 2010. And Milton well exceeded the 2010 by going to 81.4. And last time, it was 75.1. So compared to 10 years ago, Quincy was lagging behind the other communities around us. We continue to lag behind the other communities. Admittedly, we're bigger. There's more vertical housing here in these other locations. But we do have till October 31st in our census forms completed. It is online at 2020census.gov. It is extremely easy. You can do it in 10 minutes. And once again, accurate counting is per head of each household. So everybody living in your household should be counted regardless of their immigration status, regardless of their age, regardless of any other reason. If they're a family member or not a family member, it doesn't matter. As long as they're with you, just don't count your pets. You don't count pets.
Right.
Some people think they're their children, but trust me, you don't count on the census. If they could, I mean, clearly the dog population, cat population would take over the country. So, there's still time left. I mean, I know it's closing quickly because today is August 28th. So you got basically 2 months left to get this done. And want to remind folks, the scams are still going on where people are asking for money, claiming to be the census, claiming to be any government agency, being told that you would be deported if you don't pay up. The government, the census, will never ask for money over the phone, will never ask for money in person, will never ask for gift cards, will never ask to sign a release, and it most certainly will not tell you law enforcement is going to come get you on a telephone. Last time I checked, law enforcement does not call you before they show up.
they really don't want you to know they're coming. Right, exactly.
Yeah, the warrant generally shows up when a door knocks. They don't call you to let you know you should get out of the country before they come get you. So right. That doesn't happen. But I mean, I do understand there's an older population that's targeted. Given the amount of information we have on social media and data mining, these folks are able to identify through Facebook scams, through telephone. And nowadays, people are increasing caution with door-to-door. So, if you have questions about whether or not you've been scammed or is this a scam, obviously you can check the FTC website, the AG's website, but also you can call our office and we can, make some inquiries and investigate as well. I do use things like Snoop.com, which looks at website scams, which I've relied on for like 15, 20 years at this point, it feels like, to help better identify fake news. For example, there was a Trader Joe's coupon that's fake that's been floating around social media. Yeah. People have been doing these fake scams to try to get you to pay an amount of money smaller than the size of the coupon.
I see.
So, you give me $10, you get a $20 coupon.
If it seems too good to be true, it probably is, yeah.
Pretty much sums it up. So, once again, exercise caution. There aren't scrupulous people who take advantage of the situation. No one should ever be a victim. I don't care what the status is in your circumstances, whether you're here legally or undocumented, where you're out of work or you're not. It doesn't matter to me. No one should be victimized.
Sure. Take, I know you are uncontested this election cycle for the 2nd Norfolk District, but have you made any endorsements either on the state or federal level?
Yes, I mean, I endorsed Senator Ed Markey. I endorsed him very early on. I have not attended the rallies, I'll be perfectly honest. I'm still hesitant to be around large crowds of people under any circumstances. After this call, it's my shopping day, my two-week food run, where I will be expediently running on my shopping cart the best I can to avoid people. And once again, there's nothing so urgent I can't come back to the shelf later. I mean, if someone's preoccupied and looking for something and it's the same space, I have no problem being patient and go someplace else to pick up other goods in the store. But I've done that. I've not really endorsed any other of the county seats, which of course I've had more mailers in my entire lifetime on county official mailers. I don't think anybody's ever seen this many county official mailers. And I've had calls from my friends asking what these county jobs do and who are these people, because, you know, always ask the politician who the other candidates are, right? But I mean, I've not heard a compelling case to support Joe Kennedy at this stage. And I've watched like 3 of the debates and I've been on calls with Markey campaign via Zoom about the status of things. And you had an opportunity to speak before the Quincy Democratic City Committee to make the case and answer some questions. I know it's a very abbreviated amount of time because of Zoom and technology issues and so forth, because you had to do so many questions through this medium. So I think that's kind of where I am, and but I've never officially endorsed anybody else.
Okay. What's your level of confidence with the mail-in voting that's going on?
I think it would be very good overall, to be honest. I mean, it's basically an absentee ballot. I'm sure there's going to be some issues, but it should be the vast minority of issues that may arise. One ballot, one vote. And the people who make the initiative to get their ballot, generally will follow through on it. You didn't just ask for a ballot in mail, not mail it back in. I do think there's going to be a little confusion regarding when they do at the clerk's office. I know this is going to be put out next week, so it's going to be a really tight frame. People actually hear or see this, but so it may be outdated by the time they hear or see this comment. But I mean, they have to be in the clerk's office or at a polling location by Monday. I mean, Tuesday, sorry. I'm screwing myself up. Tuesday, election day before the close of polls. September 1st, at 8 p.m., your ballot has to be at City Hall or at a polling place. If you've not received your ballot yet, then go show up and vote. They will have a record of whether or not you have received your ballot, because the residency book at the polling place has already checked off everybody that's received the ballot. Mm-hmm. So there was some kind of multiple in person, but you did not or are not confident getting your ballot into the clerk's office or at 8 p.m. on Tuesday the 1st, definitely go to a polling place to drop it off or bring your stuff and go there, and they'll probably record you. I do not expect a large gathering of people at the polling places, so this should be very manageable. People have some complications. There is a drop box at City Hall, and I signed on to a letter with Speaker DeLeo and Minority Leader Brad Jones. It's a bipartisan letter to the President, Congress, and the Postmaster regarding proper funding and operation of the Postal Service. So, if you expect to get your mail-in ballot today, on the 28th, and put in the mail on Saturday, there is no assurance that it's going to make it to City Hall by 8 p.m. on Sunday. These weeks feel like years, right? Tuesday.
Yeah.
Tuesday the 1st. No guarantee. And you also need to track your ballot, whether it's received by City Hall, on the website, so you can definitely look online to find out if your ballot's made it or not. So, we got some places there. If you don't see a ballot making it up to City Hall online, then I advise folks definitely to make a trip to the polling place or I'll contact City Hall about what they can do there. So you can also early vote. I know you can't. Early voting ends Saturday, so that option's closed too. So you should contact City Hall to do next, as well as you can visit your polling place the day of.
Yep, absolutely. Anything else we should touch on, do you think, today, Tacky?
Again, I ask people to continue here to the safety guidelines by the governor. We are still in a state of emergency. I know that it seems more relaxed because people are able to go to restaurants again, but it is still a state of emergency. So, anyone asks, social distance, limit your gatherings, try to be cautious and mindful of others. Even if you have your mask on, try to be cautious and mindful of others. I do understand a lot of families under stress because of the school situation, whether it be hybrid or online, and the cautionary issues behind that. We talked a little bit about a lot of issues there causing stress with families. And still, workplace issues are hard for everybody. So stress levels, among ourselves. And now we have entertainment issues. As movies come back online, I mean, Bill and Ted's Face the Music comes off tonight in terms of a theater release. I have hesitations about theaters because of the nature of how they're enclosed. Mulan is coming on Disney Plus. I am among those disenchanted people that they have to pay extra money on a subscription program you're already paying for. So I share other people's frustrations regarding accessing online entertainment as they seem to try to gouge you. They are gouging you. It's going to be different as we move into the fall season now. And there is still that potential of occurrence of another wave. Hopefully it's not a big one. And as sadly, said earlier, reinfection seems to be possible for at least two cases. And hopefully the outliers are not the norm.
Yeah.
Meantime, definitely please fill out your census form. Definitely get to vote. If you have concerns about your safety, voting in person, definitely go to city clerk's office. When you show up, bring your own hand sanitizer, bring your own black and blue pen, wear your mask, and wearing gloves. Like I said earlier, any kind of hand covering that you can wash if it's, made of winter glove. Or you have disposable gloves. Make sure you don't throw them on the ground. I'm still seeing that. Please properly dispose of your items.
Yes, definitely. Contact information for you, Techie?
Well, telephone is still the best. I know it sounds weird. It's 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Just hit any of the staffers on the button. On the phone, and leave a voicemail. I'll get back to you as quick as you can. Obviously, you can email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. However, I'm still getting a few hundred emails a day, so despite the fact we're in a recess period. So it's not always the best way to get a hold of me if you have a constituent concern. I do understand people have policy issues. I do pay attention and read those policy requests. But given the sheer number of things I'm trying to manage, response rates on that is not nearly as urgent as dealing with people's unemployment issues, housing issues, healthcare issues, and as the economic situation continues to be questionable and people have new challenges as we move into the fall, those take our priority.
All right. Good to talk to you. Next time we see you, your hair might be down covering your eyes. I don't know.
Eventually, I would have to come up with a mechanism to safely cut my hair. But as you've been, people who want to track my hair length over the course of months, you now know it is real and it is black. There's always been questions about whether I dye and whether it's all there. So it's still all there.
Thanks a lot for your time. We'll check in September.
I'll see you next month. Thank you, Joe. Actually, I'll see you a little bit. Yeah, I'll see you next month a little bit on Tuesday night, and we'll do this again right after.
Great. Thanks, Jackie.
Sure thing, John. Take care.